Hey, I'm Kelly McEvers, and Embedded is back. President Donald Trump has no record of public service, but he does have a record in business and on TV. In our latest round of stories, we introduce you to the people who were there as he built an empire and a name. Listen on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
I bet if I told you in 2006 that we'd be talking about Will and Grace in 2017, you'd have thought it would be a nostalgia conversation only.
I would, but like the venerable gay diva it is, like Cher on her 15th farewell tour, the show is back on NBC.
It is, and the whole gang on the show is back together, and we have a couple of very special guests here to talk about it. Let's introduce our other panelists. We are so excited to have with us Tobin Lowe and Kathy Tu, the co-hosts of the podcast Nancy from WNYC Studios. Hi, you guys.
Hello.
Hi, we're even more excited to talk to you guys.
Long-time listeners, first-time panelists.
It is fantastic. So for people who might not be familiar with Nancy, and shame on you, tell them what it is.
Well, since we are on NPR, maybe we could pitch our original tagline, which is the gayest show since Car Talk.
It is a queer podcast made by queer people for queer people.
Yes, we do stories and interviews all centered around the LGBT experience today.
Yeah. So you guys did a Will and Grace episode, and now you're here to talk to us about it. For those who aren't familiar with Will and Grace, well, come on. It is about two best friends, a gay lawyer named Will and a straight interior designer named Grace, as well as their two friends, and I really struggled with how to describe Jack. I said the extremely extroverted Jack.
There you go. That's one way.
And the very rich and very idle Karen. The whole cast, Eric McCormick, Deborah Messing, Sean Hayes, and Megan Mullally is back for the revival. Glenn, I want to start off by asking you, were you a Will and Grace guy when it was on? I'm going to guess you were not.
I watched it on and off.
Okay.
And I did the requisite amount of hand-wringing about the character of Jack as a portrayal of a gay man, which, you know, looking back says a hell of a lot more about me at the time than about the show. I rolled my eyes at all the stunt casting, which became a sickness that the show kind of fell into as it went on. But the only thing the show really left in me permanently is the conviction that I must follow Megan Mullally to the ends of this earth, no matter where she leads. And she's led me to some very good places. To Party Down and Happy Endings, Web Therapy, Axe Cop, Children's Hospital, Bob's Burgers, where she is burning it up as Gail, but also to some bad places like Breaking In on Fox, which let's never talk about again. I revisited the Gay Kiss episode, which you guys made a fantastic episode of your podcast about recently. And wow, I remember when I watched it back then, it seemed kind of forced and twee and quaint.
Is this the one where Will and Jack went outside the Today Show?
Yes.
Okay, so they were offended because NBC in the show, which is also the network that was airing the show, had not shown a gay kiss that they felt they had been promised. So they went out on the street outside the Today Show with Al Roker.
Yeah.
And they kissed each other.
Right. And it was a stunt about a stunt. So it's just, you know, it's too many levels of meta for me. But I just watched it again the other day. And it doesn't feel as sort of remote and twee and quaint anymore. It has taken on, let's say, a new relevance. So, that's my experience with the show.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you, Kathy?
I am going to admit up front that I was a fair weather fan of the show. Not nearly as big of a super fan as Tobin. I thought it was a solid comedy. I enjoyed my comedies, but there's nobody on the show that I identify with, so I was kind of like, it's a fun thing to watch. It was akin to Dharma and Greg, which I also loved.
Shout out to Dharma and Greg.
Yeah, there was no difference for me.
Little The Single Guy, little Good Morning Miami.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun.
All right, so Tobin, Kathy is describing you as a super fan. Is that accurate?
Well, let's say I am of the perfect age where this show hit right as I was figuring out that I was gay. So it was on the air when I was a freshman and sophomore in high school. So this was a moment where I was deeply in the closet, knew I was gay, was still figuring that out. And so to have the show, which I could watch sort of out in the open with my parents and not feel like it was a secret or something that was shameful, that was a big deal. And so I feel like I enjoyed the show, yes, as a great comedy, but there was this other layer of it feeling like a lifeline.
Yeah. Glenn talked a little bit about how he reacted to the character of Jack. How did you react to the character of Jack?
Oh, man. You know, it's funny. I think you're so right, Glenn, with this idea of like what you feel about Jack says way more about you than it does about anything else. Because I think at the time, Will felt like the character I wanted to aspire to, and Jack was the character I was embarrassed by.
Oh, right. Wow.
And now, as an adult, it's flipped completely.
Like, wow.
Jack is the character I adore. I think Jack is the character who is most themselves. And Will is constantly hampered by, like, shame and being embarrassed by, like, getting older or by, you know, not being in a very heteronormative relationship and all these things. And so it's totally flipped for me as an adult.
Yeah, I think we'll get into that because, I mean, there's always been a personality sink in the middle of the show, like a personality black hole, where around the outside with Karen and Jack, you've got a lot of stuff going on. And Will and Grace, I don't know. What did you think, Linda?
Well, so I don't relate to this on the level of its portrayal of queer people, but I do relate to it at the level of the best friends. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I really admired about it was, and you know, people talked so much about things about the ending that they didn't like, the original ending, which happened in 2006, which they scrapped for the revival. And we'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. But in the original ending, there was this ultimately this falling out between Will and Grace that led to sort of a long estrangement that was maybe 15 years-ish, a little more. And what I did respect about that element of it was they engaged seriously with the idea that the enmeshed nature of these people's relationship, despite the fact that it was not romantic because he was gay and she was straight, despite that it was not the fact that it was not romantic, it was holding them back in some way. Mm-hmm. And it had become their emotionally primary relationship. And I liked the fact that eventually both of the people that they were involved with romantically at that time, she was involved with Harry Connick Jr. and he was involved with Bobby Cannavale, who seems to have been disappeared from this, which is so sad to me because I loved him on this show. Both of those people needed space for the relationship, even though the competition or the jealousy wasn't sexual, it was emotional. Mm-hmm. I always thought that was really interesting, and I liked the fact that they eventually kind of talked about those incredibly close relationships. One of the things that's weird about it is that for many years, it wasn't streaming anywhere, so it wasn't rewatched as often in the way that other things were. You had to rewatch it via, I know it's shocking, television. Mm-hmm. So for quite a while, I had my DVR set to just record all the episodes because it runs on Logo and Wii, and you could just I would pick up 10 episodes one day when I would get home and I would have 10 episodes of it and I would just watch them whenever. Mm-hmm. So I didn't rewatch it very much for quite a long time. And I still do find it funny. I find, as you said, Megan Mullally extremely funny. Mm-hmm. But when they said they were bringing it back, I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that. But it's clear that they, am I correct? It's clear that they wanted to come back in part because they want to make jokes about the current political moment.
Yeah. When it came back with that first episode
called
Yeah, let's talk about that first episode.
That first episode. Okay, so the first episode's called 11 Years Later. It's set 11 years later. From the jump, we get woke, we get fake news, and it just keeps going on like that, which I object to because they are not jokes. They are references. And yet, because you're filming in front of a live studio audience, the mention of the word woke gets a big laugh. And that's and I got into it, and I was feeling dread because it's like, well, this is why I don't watch, you know,
multi-camera
sitcoms. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they just needed to pump their brakes. I mean, they do a thing in the Oval Office, and everything is just so flat and one note and desperate. They're trying to. And then I realized, you know what they're doing? This is a mission statement. They're coming out of the gate with just where they stand right now.
Yeah.
So I forgave it. There was a sharp uptick for several reasons that we can go into in the second episode, but that first episode, oof.
Yeah, Kathy and Tobin, first episode.
Oh, man. I feel like these rebooted episodes, the perfect metaphor for it is the new theme song, which is like they played the classic piano theme song, and the second I heard the fake horns layered over it, it was like, no!
It's like it's not enough.
Yeah.
But I feel like the show at its best was always an incredibly detailed character study of four very different personalities and all the different ways they could bump up against each other. Mm-hmm. And so whenever they were doing character-based humor and situations, that's when they're at their best. And there's like moments of that in these new episodes.
Yeah.
But it's true when they sort of try and do the thing where they're going to use this sort of limited toolbox to address what's happening now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It feels like you're saying, of a mission statement.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was, I felt similar to the way Fuller House came back.
Oh, yeah.
But, but also a little bit different. Yeah, it had the same feeling of like, it had the feeling of we definitely need to call back to a bunch of things, but also let's hammer away that we are here in the present.
Mm-hmm.
But I did think episode two was much, much better.
Episode two was much stronger.
Yeah, and what I loved about Will and Grace is all four actors are so good at physical comedy. Mm-hmm. They do it so well.
Yeah.
And Jack was great. I love the whole shower thing with Grace and Karen. That was like classic. Classic, yeah. Will and Grace.
I did think in that second episode, the use of Ben Platt, who just won a Tony for Dear Evan Hansen, for me, it had the quality that I sometimes liked in the guest appearances that worked, which was to take somebody and have them do something that's like very weird and very kind of has like a very oddball energy that you would never watch for a long period of time. But it's kind of like funny to see it in that moment. And I enjoyed those. I enjoyed those scenes, too.
I think what's happening here is that the second episode works better because it's trying to do some of the stuff that the first episode is doing it, but better because it's actually about something, if you think about it. It's about the fact that they're entering middle age.
Yeah.
And we lost a generation of gay men. And so the gay men who are entering middle age now, and middle age and slightly older, don't have anybody to model on. We're kind of making it up as we go along.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And so how do we age is a question. And this is speaking to that, because we haven't seen this. Back in the day, they would call each other fat when they weren't fat. They would call each other old when they weren't old. Now, we're vibrating at a different frequency.
Yeah.
And like in the gay community, you always joked about youth and beauty and, you know, the need for looking great. And it's always been played for laughs. But there was a period of time there when those jokes went away because they had to. And now they're rolling back. So it just feels different. It lands on you differently. And I think it's more about something, even though it's still universal. Everybody's getting older. There's something precise in it that wasn't in that first episode.
That's so interesting.
I will agree that I thought it was great that they're addressing getting older. And I do think Ben Platt I generally enjoy. I'm going to say that I really did not enjoy his character.
Yeah.
I can throw it out there.
Yeah, I think just you're in the majority and I'm in the minority, as I have found. Go ahead.
It wasn't the way he played it. It wasn't that they tried to do something with a younger man and an older man. To me, it just stank of, if I can say, an older writing room writing, oh, I think this is what a gay millennial
right.
No, that's true.
Definitely.
It's definitely true.
Like, the level of cluelessness that they gave him was like, I don't feel like I know this person out in the real world.
Yeah. I want to hear a little bit more from Tobin about what you said before about how now Jack feels more kind of more interesting and aspirational than Will in some ways. Is that still true in these like later episodes, in these new episodes?
Oh, yeah. Actually, it's funny you mentioned that, because I felt like even in the second episode where they're dealing with aging, I feel like Jack's storyline I just enjoyed so much more because it was the physical comedy, because it was the just being silly and out there and acknowledging age in this ridiculous way. And Will's was still driven by like, oh, I feel weird about my age, and so I'm going to date this younger man. And it's still sort of a storyline driven by shame, which I'm not trying to say that isn't a real thing. That is absolutely a real thing. But I do think that for me, I am looking right now to more celebrate characters who are just joyously themselves.
Yeah.
And aren't exploring a queer or a gay storyline through shame or sadness. Like, I feel the need right now for some of that joy in a gay storyline.
It does kind of seem like Will has a lot more to carry. Like, there's a lot of stuff that maybe Jack would never get to talk about. And it seems like Will, he's the more, I guess, quote-unquote, believable character all these years, he kind of seems like he has to be the one that talks about all the tough things to talk about. Because Jack would be like, I don't care. It's not part of my world right now, so not going to worry about it. So, yeah, to me, it feels like Will has a lot to carry.
Yeah, it's funny because when you say that, it reminds me that there was a, I think, relatively early episode of Will and Grace where Will and Jack were at the gym together. And Jack overheard Will talking about him being kind of embarrassing in that exact way. Mm-hmm. And Jack sort of got, you know, obviously was very hurt by that. And they had a conversation later that was basically about what you're saying, which is this idea of like Will was more buttoned up and Jack was more was more comfortable with himself.
Right.
But then they never really seemed to believe in that past that point on the show, if that makes sense.
I agree with Tobin's point about Jack being who he is, being comfortable in his own skin, and Will being very much not. That is the essence of his character, is that rigidness, mm-hmm. that stiffness. And that's what I mean when I say the two main characters are there to be the straight lines, the straight people for the people on the periphery, which is, you know, the way a lot of sitcoms are set up. It's just you feel it necessarily here. I'm really missing the presence of Rosario, played by Shelley Morrison, the maid to Karen's character. In the second episode, we meet Bridget, the maid, who is played by Mary Pat Gleason, great actress. Nothing role, at least yet.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if that's intentional. We don't know why Shelley Morrison didn't come back. But it certainly seems like jokes about Latino people, which the character of Karen thrived upon, those don't land the same way. And so are we going to get a lot of Irish jokes from Karen? Are we going to be like...
Timely Irish.
Zing!
Yeah.
Do you think that was an intentional thing? Because it certainly feels... You definitely miss that character.
Those jokes were a big part of her
her
relationship with Rosario, for sure.
I feel very mixed about this, because I definitely think that that comic relationship was one of the strongest on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there was some pretty blatantly racist jokes that they wrote for Karen. But I think the show at the time was trying to subscribe to kind of what I think difficult people the show does, which is that if everyone's terrible, then there are no rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think that that would fly right now for, you know, sort of what they're trying to do on broadcast television.
Right.
Yeah.
So I can see why they didn't bring that character back. That said, the solution of sort of having, like you said, a replacement maid, and then also this Anthony Ramos character who appeared for literally 2 seconds.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I have to
and
assume that wasn't the plan.
Yeah. And they sort of nodded to as the new assistant. I don't know what they're going to do with him, if anything.
Yeah. I will say, too, I think when you talk about the show being groundbreaking for gay characters in some ways, when I have rewatched it, it has also really, in addition to the jokes that Karen made about Rosario and Latin people in general, the show has a very bad track record on jokes about transgender people.
Oh,
very,
yeah.
Very bad. Mm-hmm. But Karen, but kind of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been interesting to me to kind of watch these episodes thinking, like, I don't think that they would attempt those jokes anymore. Whether they're going to actually engage that in any thoughtful way, I don't know. They've kind of hinted that they will, but I don't know whether they actually will.
Well, I mean, after this aging episode where the jokes are about how desperately, specifically, Jack clings to youth or the last remaining dregs of it, it struck me that this show could go in a much broader direction, could go abfab, where the joke is how desperately these two people who are getting older are trying to cling and stay relevant and stay. I mean, that's a source of comedy. I don't think it would work with these characters, but I think that's certainly a direction they could go.
Mm-hmm. Tobin, what's your verdict right now on how the revival's going?
Oh, man. Okay. My verdict is I'm happy to sort of check in with it after it airs. It doesn't feel like a thing that I need to see or need to watch while it's on TV. But my feeling is I could have done without it, if I'm being totally honest. Mm-hmm. And that feels bad saying, because the show did have a lot of personal meaning.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately it's going to do that thing where you have to add it into the canon of how you feel about the show. And to be honest, I'm not totally optimistic after these first two episodes.
Yeah.
I feel like this is another solid comedy. I mean, to be honest, because I didn't have that connection to the show the first time it was around, maybe I would feel differently if there was a situational comedy about lesbian and a straight man best friend. There was one. It was canceled because it wasn't great. But that was recently. Anyways,
was it called Wilhelmina and Greg?
That'd be great.
See what I did there?
Yeah, yes. I see what you did there. I just think that I kind of still am like hoping for like seeing a bisexual or a lesbian person on TV that I can relate to in a sitcom in this way.
Very reasonable. Are you mixed, Glenn? Do
I'm
I gather?
Mixed, but cautiously pessimistic, because I think I think it's got potential. But if it leans into premiere impulses as opposed to the I hesitate to use the word subtle, but less blatant imagery, less broad stuff, then I think there's hope here. What I'm noticing is that in scenes between the four characters, we are starting to get nonverbal cues that they're actually friends, by which I mean Will say something and then Jack will say something that is, you know, an attack. And we see Grace smile and we see Will smile, as opposed to just it being about ba 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 ba.
Sure.
In a way that makes people who've been watching this thing for years think, oh, they're about to crack. They're about to lose it. They're about to, like, they're actually about to break. That, I think, is something that we're getting from after having watched the show for so many years, that we feel like we know these actors. We feel like we know these characters. So it's trying to bring us in. Yeah. And as long as it leans into that, I'll keep watching.
All right.
I feel like we all know this, that this is a thing with the media in general, which when one thing comes out and gets claimed as the black show or the gay show or the whatever show, people tend to only have room in their minds for one of those as the of that thing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so what I do worry about with Will and Grace coming back is this idea that people in TV will pat themselves on the back and say, oh, we have the gay show again.
Uh-huh.
And there won't be room for other things to come in its place that might be the show to address the current political situation in a funny way.
Right.
For how it affects LGBT people. Or,
right.
You know, so I do worry, as much as I'm, like, happy to revisit these characters, I think the main worry is that they're going to take up space in a way that will prevent other shows that could be great from getting airtime.
Yeah. All right. Well, come and tell us what you think about the new Will and Grace and the old Will and Grace. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, what is making us happy this week. So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from ZipRecruiter, the hiring site that offers a smarter way to find quality candidates fast. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 top job boards with one click. Then their smart technology notifies the most qualified candidates to apply. In fact, 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate through the site in just one day. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/happyhour. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Amazon Publishing and Matthew Fitzsimmons' new book, Cold Harbor, the thrilling third installment in his Wall Street Journal best-selling Gibson Vaughn series. The story that began with The Short Drop and continued in Poison Feather reaches a new level of suspense as Vaughn is freed from a CIA black site prison, only to discover he's not free from his past. Listeners of this podcast will receive 50% off the ebook edition of this series by visiting amazon.com/GibsonVaughnNPR.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
I forgot to mention that a book came out last week called From a Certain Point of View, which is written by a lot of different people, including a lot of people who write official Star Wars novels and comics. The idea is it's the 40th anniversary of the original film, Star Wars A New Hope. So they got a bunch of people, including a lot of random people, like, for example, me, to write a story from the point of view of an ancillary character in that film. So you see people in the background, and so the idea is you write a chapter that's kind of what's going on from their point of view. I wrote a piece in it, but also Paul Dini, Kelly Sue DeConnick, and Matt Fraction, Will Wheaton, Griffin McElroy, Kieran Gillen, Akron Blacker from the Thrilling Adventure Hour, a bunch of like people who took it very, very seriously, and people who took it less so, well, let me say. And I put myself in that latter category. And I would put the story that I want to talk to you about today in that category as well. It is by the great and good Mallory Ortberg.
Yay!
It is called An Incident Report because there is a scene in A New Hope in which... it is called An Incident Report because it's about a scene in which, in the original movie, Admiral Moti is force-choked by Darth Vader in a meeting. And it takes the form of a report filled out by Admiral Moti to HR describing this incident. And that sounds like it's like an Onion headline, right? Like that's a good idea, but how far does it go? I guarantee you, I assure you that the execution of this story is spot on throughout. So that's the story I recommend. I recommend several, but I also recommend just in general From a Certain Point of View.
All right. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Tobin Lowe, what is making you happy this week?
I feel like I'm a broken record in recommending this show, but Terrace House on Netflix, which is a reality TV show. It's sort of like the Japanese version of Real World. It's been around for several seasons, but Netflix has done two of their own. The one that's currently on takes place in Oahu. I would say you should watch it if you want to see beautiful, attractive Japanese people, 25% of the drinking of Real World. 100% more courtship, romance.
Oh,
I'm totally addicted.
Awkwardness?
Definite awkwardness.
Great.
Tobin, do the people who sit around on a couch and comment on it as it's going on, do they go away at any point, or are they part of the deal?
They are part of the deal, and they are the most joyous part of the deal.
Okay.
I had no idea that was part of the show.
Yeah, so in Terrace House, they cut away to a couch of six commentators, some of whom are comedians, some of who are hosts. And they just sort of talk through the drama the way you would if you were with a group of people parsing out what's happening on the
show.
Fantastic. All right. Terrace House, available on Netflix. Thank you very much, Tobin. Kathy, too, what is making you happy this week?
Well, I was very recently introduced to this little show called Broad City.
Heard of it.
I went through three seasons in like 2 days, and it is hilarious. It is witty. It is female. And I cannot get enough of Abby Jacobson and Alana Glazer right now. It is just such a funny show. Like, I haven't seen many shows recently where it makes me, like, laugh out loud funny. I think I just really like physical humor.
That's what we learned a thing today.
Yeah, we learned a thing today.
It sounds
love
like
it.
Yeah, it sounds like you like broad humor.
Hey-o.
Yeah.
Don't get up. I'll fire myself. All right. Stolen brutally from Sarah Bunting, my pal. Okay, thank you very much, Kathy. I am, like Glenn, I am going to mention something that I got to be part of, which is that I got to be on a new podcast this week. It is a sort of like a pop-up podcast project, limited run series by a friend of the show and my pal, young Alex Kappelman, who is making a short series about his potentially dumping the New York Knicks, the NBA team that he has rooted for a very long time. He's very aggravated by them, and he decided that he would set up interviews with people who root for all of the other NBA teams to try to convince him to root for their team instead. And I did kind of the opening episode where we chatted about kind of the origins of this strange project. And then in the second episode, you'll hear him talk about the Sixers with our friend Gene Demby. Oh. And then he just went around and gathered a whole bunch of people. And it's weird when you get people talking about sports fandom. They talk about their own history. They talk about the history of cities. They talk about the history of athletes. It's not really about basketball. It's really about how people attach to sports teams and how that loyalty works and how people suddenly realize as they're talking to him that they have no rational argument for their basketball team. They just love it. And they're really, really wonderful conversations. He's releasing actually 5 episodes every weekday until the beginning of the NBA season. So you can catch up on that. It's called The Decision. It's about sports and his midlife crisis, early midlife crisis, and other things. So that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can find me at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Glenn at GH Weldon. You can follow Kathy Too at _KTU. And you can find Tobin Lowe at Tobin Lowe. You can find our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides the music that you are bobbing your head to right now. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
And we will see all of you next week.